I'll try to do my best to speak in English. I'm not a native speaker, as you might see. So before I start, I'd like to thank you all to coming here and listen to what I have to say. I hope this is not a lecture. I hope this is a talk. As I'm explaining things, it would be cool if you don't understand something to interrupt me. It's okay, there's no problem. So this is a technical talk. I'll be talking about things like hash functions and the blockchain, some of the internals. But don't panic. The idea is to start slow, and I'm already nervous, so you don't have to be. I'll be nervous for you. Thanks. So when I started to try to understand what the blockchain was and the Bitcoin, I went to several talks before this, and to be honest, usually I came out of Bitcoin and blockchain talks more confused than when I went in. So I think my problem was I tried to, for example, read the news, and this is a recent news from the New York Times, and they tried to explain the blockchain and use things like using sophisticated math. And this is a news from the BBC. They say that blockchains are digital ledgers that record information from Bitcoin transactions to DNA. Blockchains consist of blocks of data in a digital ledger, and they are secure because there are some private blockchains. And if this does not make any sense to you, that's okay, because it does not make any sense to me also. And I think part of my error when I tried to understand this, I was looking in the wrong places. So the original paper, the Bitcoin paper, by a person or a group of persons called Satoshi Nakamoto, it tries to explain in a real-world way why they are proposing the Bitcoin protocol in the blockchain. Basically, they try to create a peer-to-peer transaction system to exchange value between persons without going through a central server. And part of this problem was already solved because people use digital signatures to send money between them. But this is not new, using digital signatures. The problem is that there's a problem called the double spending problem. And this is why this protocol in the blockchain was original proposed. It was not all those weird things that we read in the news. The problem is this. Bitcoins, it's just a bunch of bits, right? It's data. And if I have the data, I can do a digital signature and do a payment to person A. But since it's just data, I can do the same payment to person B. So there's a problem here. It's called a double spending problem. How do I know how, since after I do the first payment, that must be some way that the second payment to person B fails. Usually this is done through a central server. Basically, there's something on a database, say, João made a payment to person A with this Bitcoin in that amount. If I try to do the payment again on the central database, that would fail because the record exists on the database.
But how to be sure that the payer has the credit?
Well, on a central database, basically, you have the concept of a balance, right? On the blockchain, this is different. We'll go next, we'll talk about like things like how do Bitcoins appear, what is mining. This is really weird concepts that usually people don't explain. I'll try to do it. So in order to solve this problem of the double spending, there was a data structure invented. It's called the blockchain. And basically, the blockchain tries to solve this problem. We'll look into the details of what the blockchain is. And this is just it. So usually when people try to explain Bitcoin, it goes something like this. Users send transactions between them, like from A to B, at a certain amount. There's a digital signature. The transaction is broadcasted to the network. And then miners receive transactions and group them into blocks. By now, people start to get confused. Miners, blocks, what's a block, what's a miner? Miners try to find valid blocks. And when they do, they send the new blocks to the network. And they are rewarded with Bitcoins. People usually start, but how do the Bitcoins appear? What's a valid block? So, and the blockchain is a, so these definitions usually do not help anyone. At least they did not help. After you know how a blockchain works, I think it's easy to understand, but before, these concepts are so abstract that even people that work in the technical area, programmers and system administrators, it's just too separated from what it really is. I honestly could not understand it. So what I will try to do here with you, I'll try to use a tool. It's an awesome tool by Anders Brownworth. It basically, it's a tool, I've changed it a bit for this presentation. And the idea is to go with everyone to the fundamentals, what's an hash function, and what's a blockchain, and hopefully everyone will understand how this works, how Bitcoins are mined, how the Bitcoins appear, how transactions work. I'll try to do this very slowly, and if I say something that's confusing, or if I'm making a logic leap, please interrupt me and say, okay, I'm not getting you. I think it would be cool if you could just have a conversation. So this is, does everyone here know what a hash function is? Okay, so for those who do not know, hash function is basically a function that has an input, it's usually digital data, and it applies some transformations, and there's a resulting output. The output can be seen as some kind of digital fingerprint. So basically, if I change something on the input, the hash will change. So you probably are very familiar with this. And regardless of the input and the size of the input and the size of the output, the size of the hash will always be the same. And I cannot predict, for example, if I write A, that will be the output. If I write two A's, the output is completely different. So similar outputs will have very different inputs, will have their very different outputs. So this is an interesting property of the hash function. And the most important is that the same input will always have the same output. And now there's this characteristic of a hash function that is very important for the blockchain to work and for mining. So it's this. It's very hard from a CPU point of view, if I give you a hash and ask you what was the input that generated this hash. So it's very hard. It requires very CPU power and energy to reverse a hash. Basically, what we have to do when we try to find a hash, we basically brute force. We try different inputs. There's not, assuming that the hash is not broken, there's no better way to find an output than basically brute force it. So what I could do now is I could ask you, please give me a hash which the first four characters are zeros. The only way I can do this is basically I try to brute force some values and I try to find four zeros in the beginning. So this is a very important component of a hash. In order to find a hash with some characteristics, in this case, beginning with some zeros, I'll have to search it. I'll have to try many combinations. So from this, we can expand the concept to a block. Basically, this is a valid block. It's green. I mean, it should be green. It's more like yellow. But the color is green. It means that the block is valid. A block is basically, it has a block number. It has a nonce. We'll explain what the nonce means. It has arbitrary data. Don't bother with if it's transactions or whatever. It's just data. And the block has, this block has a hash. If you notice, this block hash starts with four zeros. This means that the block is valid. If I try to change the block, I put something like test. Now the block is invalid because the hash of one with this nonce and the value test, it's invalid. So this is the purpose of the nonce, and this is exactly how it is used on the Bitcoin. The nonce, it's basically a number that I try to find a valid block. I put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I would be here like all afternoon. What mine do is basically change the value of the nonce until the hash starts with four zeros. So now I'm mining the block, and okay, this block is valid. For the block one with this nonce and this value, the block starts with four zeros. So this is the basic concept of finding a valid block. As you guys know, as everyone, if you see, to find the block, I had to expand my computer and to do some, to expand some cycles. This requires power and CPU. So, oh, cool. Allow all. Owned. Okay, so this is the basic concept of a block. It has a number, it has a nonce, it has some data, it has a hash. And in order to, for the block to be valid, the hash has to start with four zeros. It's just this, no more, no less. So we can expand the concept for a block. Please go. No, it's much more zeros. I'll change you a real world example of it. I'm using four zeros because I have a MacBook Pro and my computer. If I try to hash a valid block for Bitcoin, it's like, I mean, it's zeros. All of this part is zeros. I probably go to the end of the world and my computer would still trying. Yeah, exactly. So this is what it's called a work factor. More zeros, more work, but it's not important. Here, for this presentation, we define that for a block to be valid, it has four zeros in the beginning, just this. On Bitcoin, it's more zeros, it's not relevant. So a blockchain, we have a block, it has the nonce, it has the data, same thing, it says it's hash, and now it has a new field. It's called the previous, it's the block, it's the hash of the previous block. So this is a blockchain with five blocks. This is the latest block. It has the block number, has the nonce, the data. If you see the previous hash, it's this one. And on this, in this, in the previous hash, in the previous hash of this block, is this one. And of this block is this one. So basically, we are chaining blocks, and we are using the hash of the previous block in order to link them. It's just, this is a blockchain. It's just this. There's no more things about blockchain technology. So, but this has important properties. For example, if you remember in the previous section, if I change the block, I would break the block because the hash is now, does not begin with zeros anymore. So I would try to mine a new block. But now imagine that someone, this is the blockchain, and tried to change the blockchain in some way. I would change a block in the past. But since the newer blocks depend on the older blocks, since I changed this hash here, and now the hash changed here, and now the hash is invalid. So I would have to mine this block now, and then this block. So every time I do this, I have to expand CPU power. This costs energy, this costs whatever. So if I try to change the blockchain, this will require that I have computers and infrastructure to change the data structure. Now, this is not particularly interesting because I'm just playing with values. Imagine something like, I'm using a blockchain for a movie script. It starts in a long time in a galaxy far, far away, and something happens is that there's this guy, it's called Han Solo, shoots this guy, it's called Greedo, and so he shoots first, and this is what's the story. But imagine that some years later, someone named George Lucas decides to rewrite history. He says that, no, Greedo shot Han first. And in order for this to work, Lucas would have to mine this block. It would take some time. And now mine the other block. And you can understand it. Okay, so the blockchain was remined. So what's the use of this? It's not very useful. So what we do is that we distribute the blockchain. The blockchain is not in a central server. The blockchain is in several peers. If you noticed, all of the peers have the same copy of the blockchain. And in the paper, and this is very important to understand why the blockchain is immutable and why the blockchain is secure. In the paper, there were two rules that were stated. And the first rule is that the longest chain of blocks always wins. It's the truth. It doesn't matter. Whoever, you can have 1 million copies of a blockchain. If I have one copy of one blockchain with one more block, and the old blocks are valid, my blockchain wins. This is very, very important. So the consequence of this is that the blockchain with the longest blockchain will have the most CPU power behind it. It means that more miners were behind that blockchain. So imagine this situation. Lucas tries to... And there's another thing, is that miners are constantly trying to find new blocks. Don't worry why they're trying to do this, but I'll explain it further. But the miners are always trying to find new blocks. So imagine this situation. Lucas tries to change history. I'll just write something here. And now, in order for this to work, Lucas will mine the blocks, as you've seen previously. But at the same time, the rest of the network, I mean, Lucas is mining block 4, and the network is on block 5. The rest of the network is already mining block 6. And when Lucas starts to mine block, this is assuming that Lucas has enough CPU power. Because when Lucas is trying to mine 5, the network will be on 7. So look, this is a race. The attacker will always be behind the legitimate miners. Unless the attacker has much more CPU power than all the miners, and even though it's very hard to rewrite history, because rewriting history implies mining blocks, and mining blocks implies using CPU power. So this is basically the fundamentals of the blockchain. You have to find valid blocks. Valid blocks have a hash that starts with a number of zeros, and the network is always trying to find new blocks. So if someone changes a block, it will have to remind all the blocks behind, but the network will be ahead. So with this idea, I will not talk you about transactions now, but with just this idea, I can show you a real blockchain, and I'll go back to talk about the transactions. So this is the Bitcoin blockchain. It's an actual blockchain, and the last mined block was 36 minutes ago, and this is the hash of the block. You see that is this number of zeros. And now this is the previous block. And now this is the nonce value. So in the data, we are using like scripts and garbage data. The data are basically transactions. They have inputs, they have outputs, and they have Bitcoin values. This is a valid block. And if someone tried to change something in this block, the network is already mining the other block. So the security of the network is basically that all miners are always trying to find blocks. And finding blocks requires a huge amount of CPU power. A single attacker will not be able to find valid blocks. So with this, so...
You can also shut down the rest of the world.
I shut down the rest of the world?
But that's
an interesting question. So for example, imagine this. Imagine that I'm an attacker and I avoid, for example, there's a party A that receives a Bitcoin from party B. And the blockchain that I am seeing is the blockchain of an attacker, because he did a denial of service to all the other, to all the legitimate miners and blockchains. So the only blockchain I would have to see is the blockchain of the attacker. But the problem is the attacker alone cannot generate a single block because he does not have the CPU power to find the block. And usually we have to wait like 6 blocks. This is called the confirmations. I will only send you something after 6 blocks are mined. So I have some security that the attacker will not be able to mine 6 blocks behind. So, and for a single attacker to mine a block, it would probably take him years. The network, the Bitcoin network at this moment has huge amounts of CPU power. They are using special hardware, it's called ASICs, and it's basically impossible for a single attacker to mine blocks behind, unless it has so many financial support that it would be probably not be worth it to change blocks on the blockchain.
So you mentioned that you usually wait 6 blocks before you accept that the transaction has been made. So how long does that usually take?
Well, on the Bitcoin network, it's more or less an hour. Because one block, the network usually finds one block every 10 minutes. And if the network finds more than one block for 10 minutes, the number of zeros increases in order to stop for the blocks to start appearing very, yeah. So now I can explain the rest of the questions. That is, so, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. How does the network behave if, for example, I don't know if this is possible, two mining pools with equal computation power in different parts of the network?
They find the same block?
They find a valid block.
Yeah, if two blocks are found at the same time, they have to be put in like a queue, and eventually one of the pools will win. So the longest chain, eventually it will converge to only one chain. This is if you have some conflict, the longest chain will win. But I've talked all about this, the security, the mining. At this moment, you don't know how Bitcoins are created. It's still out, and you also don't know why miners are doing this. Why am I spending like huge amounts of money to do this? So on Bitcoin, I will explain this part now. It's basically, so you have the transactions. Here, instead of data and arbitrary data, I have tokens. I have a coin. And I've called it BTC, it's Bitcoin. And I have some transaction from someone to the other person and a given amount. And now, you have to understand this is not have balances. Balances are not on the blockchain. This is only transactions. And if I change the transaction, I will break the blockchain. It's the same principle. In order to change some transaction, remember the double spending problem, I could try to put this zero in order to spend the Bitcoin again. But I will have to mine the blockchain again. And it would be very hard computate from a CPU usage point of view and energy. So it's only transactions here. But how are Bitcoins created? You have a special transaction called the Coinbase, where every time, this is the same thing, we have a block, we have an ounce, we have transactions. This is the first block, there are no transactions. We have a hash, it starts with a number of zeros. Now, every time a miner finds a valid block, meaning a block which starts with a number of zeros, there is a special transaction. It's called the Coinbase transaction. And what this means is that Anakin here, it will be the public key of the miner. The miner will receive 100 Bitcoins. So Bitcoins are put in circulation by, on the second transaction, now Anakin received 100 Bitcoins here. On the second transaction, this should be Anakin, he can transfer part of the Bitcoin to another person. And in order to see if Anakin has valid Bitcoins, I would have to check, okay, 10, what's the previous block? Okay, there's a transaction giving 100 Bitcoins to Anakin, so this works. There's no concept of balance. It's basically summing the transactions, and if I want to transfer some Bitcoins to some person, I'll have to check all the blockchain to ensure that the balance for this person is positive. It's enough. It's basically this. And miners are constantly trying to find new blocks because they earn Bitcoins. It's the economic incentive to mine into make the network safe.
Yeah.
yeah, for example, but yeah, Anakin is only minor, but I could, for example, I could put Joel, I'm a minor, it's telling me to rest. So I'm a minor, and I will try to find a valid block. After I find this block, I will broadcast it to the network, and the network will, okay, this is a valid block. The nonce changed. And now the other miners will try to find the block number 6. And now I will try, and the network is, the basically the blockchain grows like this.
Is that the job of the miners to check if someone has enough
balance? No, who checks the balance? It goes to the blockchain, it's the nodes. All nodes have a copy of the blockchain. And I mean, miners probably check it also. I'm not sure of this. But usually when a transaction is broadcasted to the network, nodes will go through the blockchain and see if the transaction is valid. And then they'll probably broadcast it to the miners. No, I think right now they have, I mean, in the beginning you download all the blockchain, it's like some gigabytes, but then you create a database, a local database, and you can see for a given person, for example, for Luke, for Yoda, I can check on a relational database locally, what's the balance for this person, and it's. So basically, I do some sort of cache on top of the blockchain.
One scalability.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to grow forever.
Well, yeah, that's one of the big questions. I don't know if you know, but right now there's like this huge civil war on Bitcoin. There are some guys. It's called Bitcoin Core, and they're proposing a scalability solution using side chains and other stuff. And there's other guys that's proposing, and some other guys are proposing a different solution. It's basically put bigger blocks, and the blocks will be getting bigger each time. So yes, there's a problem, and there are several solutions, but there is a huge amount of money involved, and they're fighting.
What we see here is a special website.
Oh yeah, this is an application.
This is to show or this is real?
Yeah, no, this is just an example application. Okay. For example, here on this application, valid blocks have 4 zeros, but real blocks, this is a real Bitcoin block, like they have a huge amount of zeros. And in order to find these zeros, it requires immense CPU power.
In Japan, some men have been arrested because they were accused to have stolen millions of dollars. What have they done?
Oh, in bitcoins?
In bitcoins.
Okay, so before talking about that, I would like to know if is everyone comfortable with the concept of the blockchain and how this works, the hash and the. Yeah, sure. So.
So in here, I'm a miner. I'm creating these blocks. I'm creating these blocks.
Yeah.
And my purpose is to gain Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But where did I get this transaction from?
Oh, sorry. Basically, when I went to exchange one Bitcoin from me to you. What I do is I broadcast that transaction to the network. It's a peer-to-peer network, and miners are listening for those transactions. And basically, they take the transactions, they put them in blocks, and so miner takes all the transactions on the network, puts them in blocks, puts the block number, and tries to find the nonce that when we hash it, the hash of the block starts with 4 zeros. So basically, miners are putting transactions in blocks and finding a valid hash for that block.
No,
if I try to change this block, it would require you. It would be very difficult because, for example,
guys are doing like
yeah,
much more work than I have.
Exactly. For example, if you are trying to change some transaction here, at the same time, all the other nodes are already on the top of the chain finding new blocks. So you have to remember that when you change something here, you break
the chain?
If you do that, there's one thing, it's called a 51% attack. But you could try, but still it's hard. But that's one attack on the Bitcoin network. You basically try to change this block. And you try to create, yeah, exactly. Because remember, you are trying to change this block, but the network is already trying to change the next block also. You're always one block behind. So you could try to mine a block without a transaction, but the network is already trying to mine the next. So, but yeah, but there's an attack that is possible if you have more than 51% of all the CPU power on the network. But that's more, I would like not to go, just not to confuse people. You had one question?
So basically when I send something to person A,
yeah.
That transaction has to go on the payload of the next block, right?
Not necessarily. The transaction goes to a queue, and miners will grab your transaction when they want.
What prevents miners to change my payload into something else?
No, because these transactions are digitally signed. And that answers also your question. What people did was, when they stole the bitcoins, you have to imagine, do you know how public key cryptography works? You have a public key, a private key. Basically, in order for you to prove that you have some bitcoin, you do a digital signature on a transaction. And the miner does not have your private key of the bitcoin. The miner only has your public key and a signature. When you exchange a Bitcoin, you do not give the private key. What you do is you create a transaction that says, I have this public key, and I will transfer this Bitcoin to another public key, and I do a digital signature. So miners cannot change this. So what the attackers did was stole the private keys associated. So you see this address here? This is a public key address. And the transaction, this is a transaction, and basically there's a digital signature somewhere here. It's not here, but that's the principle. But that's just public key cryptography. That's not the blockchain. It does not have nothing to do directly with public keys and signatures. The blockchain is just creating a chain of blocks that is very hard to change because it requires CPU power. It's just this, there's nothing more. So is there any more?
What's the incentive for you to use the transactions and not just try to mine an empty?
That's a really good question. In reality, transactions have a fee. So the miner, you can see here, you see here, this transaction was from this address to, for example, for this person to these two persons, but the miner got this fee in Bitcoin. And in the future, there is a limited number of Bitcoin. In the future, there will be no more Bitcoins. So the fees will start to rise. So that's another problem with Bitcoin. But the idea of the blockchain is actually really simple. And it's just finding blocks which have a number of zeros. The problem is that finding those blocks is very hard to do unless you have many CPUs and many GPUs and ASICs.
More or less in 10 minutes,
yeah.
There is a block count.
Yes. Yeah, what the network does is, you have to have this in mind. The majority of the network is not malicious. So all of the nodes are running an algorithm. And every, I don't know, 496 blocks or 1,024 blocks, the nodes will do a calculation. Okay, so how many blocks were calculated? How many time passed? So they do average. If the number of blocks on average is bigger than one every 10 minutes, all the nodes agree to, okay, let's put one more zero. They adjust the difficulty dynamically. What they do is they find how many blocks were mined. They do, okay, they do an average, and then
they agree.
They have to agree because they are running the same code.
The peer-to-peer network.
Yeah, the majority, that's the thing, you know. You have to understand that all nodes, the majority of nodes are supposed to be running on the same code, and they have to agree, because if they don't agree, these consensus rules would not work.
The majority agrees that the next block should have one extra zero or one less zero.
Yes.
By rejecting the next block, it doesn't
mean exactly. If a miner mines a block with an insufficient number of zeros, it's not a valid block. It's the same thing. A valid block has to have a number of zeros. It could be 1, 2, 20. If it's not what's the current criteria, the block is rejected.
But what happens at that moment where part of the network wants a block with one more zero, and the other part of the network rejects those blocks because they have one more zero?
I don't know. I think the majority will win. The longest chain will win. It's the only criteria to resolve conflicts. Exactly. They could reject the blocks, but eventually, if a longest chain with the blocks they rejected appears, they'll have to accept the longest chain. Yes.
Okay. Behind the system, there is an algorithm and a software that is creating the hash code from the input.
The hash is very simple. You see this block when, for example, this.
So my question is, there is a code even this is compiled.
Yes.
But if someone is uncompiling it, in order to
the code is open source.
Anyone can understand how it works.
Yes, because the security of the protocol is not on the obscurity of the code. The security of the protocol is that in order to find valid blocks, you have to have CPU power. It's the golden rule. You have to have CPU power. You could have malicious blocks that try to sends invalid blocks and all those things.
Doesn't matter.
The as long as the majority of the miners are legitimate and they have enough CPU power, it doesn't matter. So there were some questions.
There is only one provider of such system?
No, I think there's like two or three implementations. There's Bitcoin Core. And there's like other, and there are more crypto coins. Bitcoin is one. There's Ethereum, and there's
Dogecoin.
So, so basically, this is it. I mean, if does anyone have any more questions? If you can talk to me if you want to explain something more in person.
And, where are stored the data?
Sorry?
Where are stored the data?
On every node on the Bitcoin network.
So the ledger is not something.
No, the ledger is there is a copy on every node that participates. There are several gigabytes. Yeah. This is not supposed to be efficient. This is supposed to be safe in a decentralized way. I mean, if someone tries to sell you, I'll be using a blockchain because it's more efficient. How? I mean, you're using huge amounts of CPU power. what the blockchain gives you is decentralized trust. So I'll have to go. So thank you if anyone wishes to talk to me.